you hate government, one of them libertarian types, or maybe you just can't stand the president, gun grabbers, or warmongers. Me too. That's why I invented LibertyStickers.com. Well, Rick owns it now, and I didn't make up all of them, but still, if you're driving around and want to tell everyone else how wrong their politics are, there's only one place to go. LibertyStickers.com has got your bumper covered. Left, right, libertarian, empire, police state, founders quote, central banking. Yes, bumper stickers about central banking. Lots of them. And, well, everything that matters. LibertyStickers.com. Everyone else's stickers suck. All right, y'all, welcome back. I'm me, Scott. Scott Horton here, live noon to 2 Eastern Time on the Liberty Radio Network, Monday through Friday. I do KPFK on Sunday mornings, 90.7 FM in Los Angeles. Yesterday was Mohammed Sahimi on the Iran nuclear deal. You'll want to check the archives if you didn't get a chance to hear it. Our guest today on the show is our good friend Eric Margulies, who is always so gracious with his time. I'd say you say yes, you'll come on the show about 99% of the times I ask, Eric, and I sure do appreciate that. Welcome back.
Thanks, Scott. I always enjoy being on your show. It's nice talking to someone as learned and well-prepared as yourself.
Well, I'm trying. I did read the article. very interesting stuff, and thank you for knowing everything about everywhere on this planet. Who do I get to talk to about Nigeria? Yeah, try ericmargulies.com. That'll be first stop, and then you can go ahead and quit looking. Can Buhari rescue Nigeria from itself? Who is Buhari?
Well, Buhari is actually a general. He's a former general and a former president. He overthrew the Nigerian government back in the decades ago. Staged a coup. He was in power for a while. He said he was going to clean up the awful corruption that was there. He was a professional general. He was a man regarded as honest, which is very unusual in Nigeria. He didn't stay in office very long, but he left office unsullied and untainted by corruption. He didn't leave office with Mercedes and mansions and Swiss bank accounts. He was as far as we know, an honest leader. He sat all these years watching Nigeria sink into more corruption, and he decided to run for president, and he won.
Now, isn't that interesting? A military dictator who overthrew the previous government, which I guess was not a democratically elected one, whoever it was he overthrew, but then with basically total power in his hands, he did a kind of pseudo George Washington and refused to just make it all about himself, left office willingly, is that right? Or he was overthrown too, or what?
No, he left office willingly.
That's amazing.
He was very frustrated because making things happen in Nigeria, a giant federal state of 170 million people with, I don't know, 400 different languages and dialects. And
wow.
Very difficult.
Yeah, no doubt about that. Yeah, and I don't mean that's amazing for Africa. I mean, that's amazing for all of humanity. I mean, that just almost never happens. So, as far as a politician goes, you sold me on this guy, and now he won a landslide against Goodluck Jonathan. Is that it?
That's correct. Goodluck Jonathan came to power in a rigged election, and he was an amiable chap. But he proved to be a complete zero as a president. And so Nigerians were fed up. And this is the first time that a sitting president has been defeated by a challenger since Nigeria's modern history, since 1960. So it was a revolution. He won by over 2 million votes. The election had all kinds of irregularities, as Nigerian elections usually do. But by and large, most people considered it a reasonably fair and decent election. People of Nigeria spoke, and they spoke saying they wanted a tough, competent leader.
Hey, did I ever tell you the story about how the guy that used to own the taxi cab I drove back, 12, 13 years ago now, wow, he was a chief of the Yayabo tribe, which I'm sure I'm saying incorrectly there, and I even met his father, who was the king of the, how do you say it?
Yorubas?
I guess so. Boy, I got it way wrong then. Yeah, them. He was the king, and I met him. He was sitting in a throne in the living room. Very nice throne. I should have taken pictures of it.
Should have gotten one for yourself, King Scott.
Wouldn't that be nice? No, it was really cool. All carved out of very fine wood and lions' heads and all these things on it, whatever. And he was an old, old man in his late 80s, I think, when I met him, his father. And anyway, yeah, I should try to track him down and talk with him a little bit about this. And I think he must have, I don't know, is that a Christian tribe or is that how it's divided?
Well, I'm not sure which tribe you're referring to. It sounds more like it was Muslims from the north, but hard to say.
Yeah. Well, anyway, his father seemed like a nice guy, and he certainly was salt of the earth kind of guy, you know, jump in front of a bullet for you kind of a guy. Really great guy. Anyway, so that's my little Nigeria story. There are a lot of Nigerians in Austin and a lot in the cab business, which I used to be in. And so, and they would fight, too, like really mad, all the different tribes Nigerians, as you say, is a very catch-all phrase for a lot of people. So now, you say in the article, too, how, and you may have just mentioned it, and I forgot already, that the predominantly Christian South actually came out and voted for this guy in great measure, too. That's how much that they respect him from before, huh?
That's right. And that's been amazing because there has been, you know, Nigeria is about 50-50 Christian and Muslim. South is predominantly Christian, North is predominantly Muslim. They were completely different countries until the British amalgamated all of this area to create Nigeria, to secure its oil, strategic territory. And normally the Christians vote for a Christian president, like Goodluck Jonathan, and the Muslims vote for a Muslim candidate. But this time, remarkably, a lot of Christians decided to vote with their heads rather than their hearts.
Okay, now, so I think, I don't know, I think we'll probably have to pick up the subject of Boko Haram and all of that on the other side of the break. But in the meantime, could you talk a little bit about the, was it the 100th of 1% that gets to keep all the oil money through their state power while everybody else goes hungry, or what? How's that work?
Well, Nigeria has been one of the poster child for corruptions and thievery. The almost all the money that Nigeria has made from its vast oil fields has been stolen. People have a lot of trouble pointing to anything that has been built with the proceeds of this oil treasure trove. Ecologically, the country is a disaster. The former capital, Lagos, is a horror show of traffic congestion and pollution, and nothing works very well in Nigeria. And everything runs on payoffs, known as dash, in Nigeria. So there tens of billions of dollars have been stolen. And all of the money, nearly all of the money, has gone either Swiss banks or London property markets. And, you know, the Nigerians replied, said, well, yeah, we are big crooks. There's no doubt about it. But so are the people who take our money and hide it away. And they have a point.
Yeah. Now, you know, there was, do you remember that article by Sebastian Younger in Vanity Fair back in 07 about the guys in the Niger Delta who are getting all their oil stolen, and they were kidnapping the Shell executives, but then letting them go so that they would basically not brainwash them, but just explain to them how unfairly they were being treated. And then they would let the guys go and they'd go back to Shell Oil saying, man, we're really doing the wrong thing here. And it was all about, of course, like you're saying, the corrupt and connected get to keep everything, and the people whose property actually sits on top of the oil get absolutely nothing. I was wondering if you know if those guys are even around anymore, because they were fighting. They had bought some rifles with some black market oil money, and they were fighting, and I wonder whether they even exist anymore now. I haven't heard from them in a while.
Scott, this is happening in the Niger Delta, which is particularly rich in oil, and it's an area of vast pollution done by the oil companies. There was a local who raised up a great protest group. His name was Ken Sarawiwa, and he was murdered, much like Brazilians who protest about the destruction of the Amazon forest. These ecological heroes, I call them, was killed. And that sort of quieted down a bit, but I'm sure it's going to come back again, because the damage done to the Niger River Delta is terrible.
Yeah, man, and that article by Younger, they had painted little white circles on their arms. It was supposed to make them bulletproof, and I was thinking that's really just not going to work.
Well, that takes me back to the 60s of Congo.
Oh, no. Well, we'll pick that up on the other side of this break. Eric in the 60s in the Congo, y'all, right after this. Hey, I'm Scott Horton here to tell you about this great new book by Michael Swanson, The War State. In The War State, Swanson examines how Presidents Truman, Eisenhower, and Kennedy both expanded and fought to limit the rise of the new national security state after World War II. This nation is ever to live up to its creed of liberty and prosperity for everyone. We are going to have to abolish the empire. Know your enemy. Get The War State by Michael Swanson. It's available at your local bookstore or at Amazon.com in Kindle or in paperback. Just click the book in the right margin at ScottHorton.org or TheWarState.com. All right, guys, welcome back to the show. Hey, I'm Scott. It's my show, the Scott Horton Show. I'm talking with the great Eric Margolies by way of the Skype here. And we're talking about the free and fair election of the new leader of Nigeria and the last guy stepping down without a fight. This is nice. It's not anarcho-capitalism, but it's progress. And then we're talking about related issues, of course, the oil and the wars. We're about to talk about Boko Haram in a minute, but you mentioned this in your article, too, about your time in the 1960s in the Congo, and you just mentioned that when I mentioned these guys fighting in the Niger Delta back 8 years ago now, who were painting these little white circles on themselves in the mystical belief that it would make them bulletproof in going up against the American-backed Nigerian army that was slaughtering them for resisting the theft of their oil. So tell us all about it. What were you doing in the Belgian Congo? Having a lot of fun?
Well, Scott, it was a wonderful time in the Congo. It was nominally granted independence by the Belgians, but everybody was fighting over it because it had oil and uranium, and there were breakaway provinces in the south, like Katanga, and Belgians were financing all kinds of mercenaries, like the wonderful colorful characters like Mad Mike Hoare and Colonel Bob Denard, who routed these 100 white mercenaries, routed the whole Congolese army. There were the Simbas, who were backed by the communists. They were terrible people, step away from being wild men, who painted their bodies in feathers and carried these amulets given to them by witch doctors, and they believed it would make them invulnerable. So it was a crazy period. But one reads now that mercenaries from South Africa, mainly from a unit called Crowbar, which I knew very well because I was with them up along the Limpopo River hunting ANC, African National Congress units who were attacking farmers. They are very tough people. They're back in Nigeria now being employed because the Nigerian army is so useless and ineffective.
Yeah, now, about that, I think it's interesting, this Boko Haram group, that I read about this. The Boko doesn't mean Western education. It means deception. And then it came to mean Western education because the British, of course, and their sock puppets were always teaching these people that they're supposed to bend over and take it. And their idea is that, no, actually, we shouldn't. And those kind of untruths are forbidden around here. And so I always wonder, how do you fit the words Western education in Boko? You know,
I don't think much makes sense about that movement. And I've given up trying to figure out what they're all about. To me, they're a bunch of bush bandits, and they're using, like ISIS in Iraq and Syria, they're using the vocabulary of Islam to sort of weld together their movement to justify their actions. But what they really are is a very ugly reaction to the corruption and mismanagement and malfeasance that's been going on in Nigeria. I mean, with all the money being stolen from the country and the average Nigerian living on less than $2 a day, that puts them amongst the poorer people in the world. These people are out attacking and trying to exact revenge on government. Call them a Nigerian version of Cambodia's, you know, Pol Pot people, Khmer Rouge.
Yeah, well, and so I wonder about, you know, how much popular support they could possibly have. I mean, I've seen, it's kind of crazy, but in Iraq and in Syria. You got some bin Ladenite madmen that end up with, you know, more or less the support of the population because, I guess they're fearful, but also the other guys are worse, they think, that kind of thing. But on the other hand, you look at a bunch of crazies like this who, as you say, they're basically bandits, only way, way, way out of line. It maybe it'd be easy enough if the military got one good division together, just hunt these guys down and kill them and be done with it then, or what?
Well, the military is out of ammo. They don't have enough guns or vehicles that have all been stolen by their officers or never provided by the government. And it's interesting because beside these mercenaries in South Africa, the main fighting force opposing Boko Haram now is the Chadian army. And that's a whole other fascinating story out of remote Chad in the wastes of the desert, a French protectorate equipped with French military equipment and French military advisors has turned out to be the most effective fighting force and is actually holding back Boko Haram while the Nigerian army is running away.
Yeah. And how many are there in Boko Haram, do you think?
Oh, nobody knows because they won't stand still long enough to be.
Yeah.
But, I think they probably have perhaps maybe 5,000-7,000 people running around in a very large area.
Yeah, you know, I always wonder, you know, obviously this serves the war party, but I think I read some pretty good journalism too that was saying that when America chased the helped the Mujahideen take Libya, and then they went and chased the Tuaregs down into Mali in that war we talked about back in 2012, that at some point the Ansar al-Sharia local al-Qaeda affiliates in Libya ended up coming into contact with these Boko Haram guys and giving them new weapons and new training and some shoulder-fired RPGs and tactical advice and this kind of thing. Do you think that's really right?
I think so, yes. The this militancy and anti-Western militancy spread across Sahara along the traditional caravan trails. When we overthrew the Libyan government, that released very large amounts of arms into the region. So we are reaping the whirlwind which we created. Let me add another point, Scott, if I may. I wasn't quite clear on General Buhari. He didn't initially give up office. He was ousted in another military coup or elbowed out of office, but then he came back into serving in the government later but announced that he was not going to launch any more coups, or he didn't want to be president again. Well, he's changed his mind.
I see. Well, that's good. I'm glad we got that point of clarification in there, too. All right. Well, I'm sorry we didn't have time to talk about Yemen, but soon again, sir.
Next week.
All right. Great. Thanks very much, Eric. I should appreciate
Scott.
It. All right, y'all. That's the great Eric Margolese. He's the author of War at the Top of the World, An American Raj, Liberation or Domination. His website is ericmargolese.com. And he also writes for lewrockwell.com and for uns.com. That's UNZ, uns.com. We'll be right back. Hey, all, Scott Horton here. It's always safe to say that one should keep at least some of your savings in precious metals as a hedge against inflation. And if this economy ever does heat back up and the banks start expanding credit, rising prices could make metals a very profitable bet. Since 1977, Roberts & Roberts Brokerage, Inc. has been helping people buy and sell gold, silver, platinum, and palladium, and they do it well. They're fast, reliable, and trusted for more than 35 years. And they take Bitcoin. Call Roberts & Roberts at 1-800-874-9760 or stop by rrbi.co. Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here for WallStreetWindow.com. Mike Swanson knows his stuff. He made a killing running his own hedge fund and always gets out of the stock market before the government-generated bubbles pop. Which is, by the way, what he's doing right now. Selling all his stocks and betting on gold and commodities. Sign up at WallStreetWindow.com and get real-time updates from Mike on all his market moves. It's hard to know how to protect your savings and earn a good return in an economy like this. Mike Swanson can help. Follow along on paper and see for yourself. WallStreetWindow.com. Hey, you own a business? Maybe we should consider advertising on the show. See if we can make a little bit of money. My email address is scott@scotthorton.org.